Welcome to the Silent London Podcast, Episode 2, presented in association with SOAS Radio. Ladies, please remove your hats. Hello, I'm Pamela Hutchinson, the editor of the Silent London website, and I'll be your host today. With me in the studio, you'll find two Silent Londoners. First, we've got producer Pete Barron.
Hello.
Hello, Pete. And we also have a very special guest with us, film writer and critic for viewlondon.co.uk, also a renowned tweeter under the guise of FilmFan1971, it's Matthew Turner.
Hello.
Hello, Matthew. Today, we're going to be talking about the British Silent Film Festival, which took place last month, and anticipating a summer of silent Hitchcock. We'll also be discussing our favourite silent film venues in the capital, and Matthew will be talking about his favourite silent film. We won't reveal it yet, but it's a stone-cold classic. However, he hasn't even watched it all the way through.
I will take issue with that, but yes.
It's controversial already. If you want to get in touch with us about anything you hear on the podcast, you can email silentlondonpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet me at silent_London, or you can leave a message on the Facebook page, facebook.com/silentlondon. The music you've heard there is a snippet from Neil Brand's orchestral score for Hitchcock's silent film, Blackmail, also a sound film. The first thing to say is thank you to Neil for kindly letting us use it. And the second thing to do is congratulate ourselves on how apt it is, seeing as Hitchcock's silent films, all nine of them that survive, are coming to the big screen in London this month. And they've all been fully restored too. You'll find full details at silentlondon.co.uk or on the BFI website for that matter. But the headlines are these. Blackmail will be shown at the British Museum with a 10-piece ensemble playing Neil Brand's score. The Pleasure Garden screens over two nights at Wilton's Music Hall with a new score from young composer Daniel Patrick Cohen. You can watch The Ring at Hackney Empire with a jazz score by Soweto Kinch. And the London Symphony Orchestra will accompany The Lodger at the Barbican with a new score that's been written by Nissan Sawney. That's also going to be theatrically released on the 10th of August. Everything else is to be announced. So, Matthew, you're a big Hitchcock fan. So are you keen to see these silents?
I'm very keen to see these silents, yeah. I've only seen Blackmail and The Lodger. I haven't seen any of the others. So, yes, I'm very excited. Which ones are you particularly looking forward to?
Blackmail, I mean, I think really is the masterpiece that we're talking about here. But there are nine of them. They're all quite different. I mean, this is obviously Hitchcock's early work, so they're not all suspense thrillers. I'm a big fan of The Manx Man. Which is not one of the ones that's getting a big gala screening, but also The Ring is a very, very powerful film. It's a boxing film. It's also a love triangle, and I'm quite excited to see how it works with the jazz and hip-hop score. What about you, Pete?
I equally like The Manxman, mainly because the lead character is called Pete. also, it was filmed in my hometown, as were many Hitchcock films, because I grew up in Bournemouth at Elstree. So British International Pictures were based there, and so I have a kinship, even if I have no real knowledge of many of the films. I've seen, I've seen Blackmail and I've seen The Lodger quite some time ago now. But I'm looking forward to catching up, and I like the site-specific screenings. It'd be lovely to see them at the Empire. And The Ring really interests me. So particularly The Ring, I think, is the one I'm looking forward to seeing.
I've seen The Lodger relatively recently because I wrote a piece on it for World Film Locations London book. But I haven't seen Blackmail in probably 15, maybe even 20 years. So, yeah, quite looking forward to see that again.
We had a thing over the weekend. I'm going to bring you some news from Cannes here, which is what I want to do. And the restoration of The Ring had its debut, its world premiere at Cannes. And I have it from the horse's mouth that there was a full house and they were on their feet at the end. So that's something, you know, obviously bodes well. I think it's quite interesting that there's a lot here that doesn't feel like what we expect from Hitchcock. So, you know, we've got comedy, very broad comedy in The Farmer's Wife or something. It's sort of rural matchmaking comedy. And I suppose what I'm interested in, Matthew, is as someone who is a Hitchcock fan, you know, there's a big full season, all the Hitchcocks on. Is there something that would make you go and see The Farmer's Wife when you could go and see Psycho?
In what sense? I mean, I'm actually not personally much of a rewatcher. If I've seen something, I feel like I want to see something new. So I'm much more interested in seeing in the silence because I haven't seen them before than I am necessarily going to go and see Psycho again. Vertigo is my all-time favourite film, so I probably will go and see that again. And maybe there are one or two, like if, you know, friends are going or something. But yeah, I would much rather see something I've not seen before.
Oh, I Yeah, it's
I mean, various variation in styles as well. I mean, Hitchcock does use all of these things elsewhere. He does do comedies later. He does do suspense. And, of course, there's lots of very great silent sequences and musical silent sequences. So I think just getting all those together would be a really interesting thing. So.
I mean, I'd be quite impressed if anybody, you know, can see the whole season, but... If you, that would be a lot of films.
Nine's not that many.
Well, no, the whole season.
Oh, the whole season. Well, yes, that might be pushing it a bit, yeah.
That's when you get to see the connections. I mean, you'll see...
It would be really interesting to see just how much of his later work is already present in his early work. I mean, certainly you see that in Blackmail and The Lodger. He's already doing things that you, Chinstroke, that's definitely... Yeah. Oh, that's from Rope or, you know, something like that.
We're doing a series on the website at the moment, so we're introducing all the silent Hitchcocks one by one. So we've started with The Pleasure Garden. And the very opening sequence of The Pleasure Garden is a lot of blonde showgirls getting their legs ogled by sort of leery men. And if you've watched other Hitchcock films, all that voyeurism suddenly becomes terribly sinister. And you also think, oh, you know, they're singling out the blonde. I know why. And you realise it's 1925.
Who was that blonde that messed with Hitchcock's mind in such a way? That's what I want to know. I wonder if the silent films hold a clue to that.
Yeah, well, maybe she was Czech. I don't know. it was Annie Ondra or Lillian Hall Davis's fault, clearly. we'd probably have to ask Elliot Stannard.
Are there any blondes whose names begin with M? That's in the movies. That's question.
That's important, isn't it?
Ooh. I'm going to have to think about that one. The Manx Woman, maybe. I'm going to have to look that one up. I'm going to say that there's a lot to look forward to in the season. There's a lot of strange things you might not expect. The Ring and the Champagne are both getting live streamed, so you don't actually have to be in London to see them.
Mm-hmm.
Do check out the series on the website. We're going to be... taking them one by one.
Absolutely. You can watch some of these things on the web already anyway. I mean, Manxman is online fully because I was watching it this afternoon. So
that's why
on YouTube.
Yeah, on YouTube. So that's
is there, that because
so.
They're out of copyright or something?
I think I'm not quite sure why it's there. It definitely seems to be on it was on an official website, but most of these things are quite wrapped up in rights still, some of these things. But
there are probably lots of different versions. I think that I think that someone has the rights to all of these films, and I don't think that it's always the BFI.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, I don't think it's at all ever. The BFI. So I obviously officially always say that nothing on YouTube is there because it should be, but if you want to watch it, I'm not going to stop you.
I've never done that. I've never watched a film on YouTube.
Have you not?
No.
There's plenty out there.
If you have an Apple TV box, you can throw YouTube to your television.
So someone was telling me just this week.
Mm. Yeah.
Particularly good for two-reelers. You know, YouTube is great for two. I mean, I've been watching a lot of Buster Keaton two-reelers. It's really useful if you're reading a book which has refers to a two-reeler here or there. You can just suddenly see it, which is great.
Also, you can buy the beautiful Masters of Cinema DVD box set.
Absolutely, as well. And that's it.
Other options are available.
It's a taster. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a taster.
Of course, not everything is on YouTube. That's my really clunky link.
It's a good link.
In case you were in danger, ever, of thinking that British silent cinema begins and ends with Hitchcock, the British Silent Film Festival is always on the case. Now, last month's weekend-long event in Cambridge was packed full of some classics, some little-known gems, and quite a few surprises. Here's what some of the people attending the festival had to say about it. I'm here at the British Silent Film Festival in Cambridge, where there is barely any time between screenings to do anything other than refill on coffee and check your programme to find out where your next screening is. But the people that come here are lovely, lovely people, and so I have managed to take some of the delegates aside, take 5 minutes of their precious time and ask them how long they've been coming to the festival, what's been their favourite screening so far, and what they're looking forward to the most. So here it is, the People's Review of the British Silent Film Festival.
I'm Lucy Dutton and I'm very interested in British silent cinema, particularly the director Maurice Elvey, who I'm trying to write a thesis about.
Great, and this isn't your first visit to the British Silent Film Festival?
No, I've been coming probably for about 5 years, 5 or 6 years I think.
So what have you seen so far that you've really enjoyed?
The best thing that I've seen this year is The Only Way, which I saw yesterday, which absolutely blew me away.
And that's a Dickens adaptation.
It is, yeah. It's an adaptation of A Tale of Two Cities. And I just went home almost straight away after it yesterday because I was just so taken with it. And it's something I'll remember, I think, for many, many years to come.
Can you tell me what film you're looking forward to most?
Well, one of the reasons that I'm here today is because I want to see Lady Windermere's Fan, which is showing next, because it was made by the Ideal Film Company, and at the moment I'm writing about Ideal, so it's really useful context for me in terms of my own research.
My name's Jenny Stewart, and I've come to the festival because I really enjoy watching silent films. I think they're a part of our history, and it also, they just show how wonderful British cinema was during that period as well, so that's why I'm here. And I've been coming to the festival around 5 or 6 years now. I can't remember exactly, but it's about 5 years, I think. I loved seeing The Firstborn with Stephen Horn's score. I thought that was a real treat, and again, a film that, you know, people that perhaps haven't seen much silent film, that's one that they, I think, would you know, encourage people to watch more. And it was just wonderful. It was a lovely experience. I'm looking forward to, obviously, The Dodge Brothers. And I'm just looking forward to just seeing films that I don't know much about that end up surprising you, or you didn't expect them to be as good as they were. That's what I really love about the festival. It's just those films that mid-afternoon, you don't know what to expect, and they end up being fantastic. So.
My name is Jay Weisberg. I think this is the 7th or 8th time I've been to the festival. I come because it's the only place, really, to see the totality of British silent cinema. It's been so keen in the reassessment of the genre. There are films that I've known before that are masterpieces, films like Visage d'Enfant and Firstborn. So those are films I've seen that are dearly loved. Otherwise, other things that I've enjoyed so much are many of the shorts are terrific. And these, of course, are much more difficult to see in general. So those have been wonderful. The P.G. Wodehouse adaptations have been delightful and well made. We should include both terms in the description. I'm really curious about The Bohemian Girl.
My name is Jane Bryan, and I've been a regular attender at the festival since number 4. So that's 11 years ago, 12 years ago. 13 years ago, who knows? Anyway, a long time, and I love silent cinema.
Right. Can you tell me what's been the favourite thing that you've seen so far?
Possibly Visage d'Enfant or The First Book.
And is there something you're particularly looking forward to?
The Dodge Brothers, I have to say, but it's not it's the whole event, the whole music, film, combo. It's been exciting.
Great.
Okay, I'm Federico Striuli, I'm from Italy, and I'm coming to the festival because, as the all other participant, I'm very interested in silent movies. We have this kind of common passion altogether for silent movies. And, you know, when I first saw the program, I said, I'm not coming. But I was sure because I knew very few titles. And then it's what we are looking here. So we're trying to find out of what's uncommon and unseen. I saw the Visage d'Enfant, the one based on P.G. Wodehouse and W.W. Jacobs' works, and that are, you know, mainly quite British. You know, I'm from Italy, so it's very interesting to see how, you know, I think one of the main strength of this festival is that the bulk of these movies had a lot of something very original in the intertitles too, because they're based on literary works. Mm-hmm. So there are comedies, and intertitles too can highlight this kind of strength, in my opinion. And
what are you looking forward to most?
Livingstone this morning, maybe the Livingstone, and you know the Russian one tomorrow, the Ghost That Never Returns. It should be very interesting.
My name is Helen Cox, and I came to the festival because I edit a film magazine and I want to do more silent film coverage.
Okay, and this is your first visit to the festival, yeah?
First time.
And can you tell me what was your highlight?
Definitely the film about World War One and the horse. Two down and outs?
A couple of down and outs.
A couple of down and outs, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, definitely. So moving and just really well put together, and the accompaniment was great.
Okay, that's great. And do you think you'll be back next year?
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you very much.
David Absalom. I'm here because I've always wanted to go to the festival, and it's finally in Cambridge.
So you're enjoying it so far?
Yes, brilliant.
Yeah. What's been your highlight?
Head of the Family, and I enjoyed the golfing films, and Visage d'Enfant.
Good. And what's the film that you're looking forward to the most the rest of the weekend?
It'll be Santa Ana, because I like Astrid Nielsen.
My name is John Sweeney, and I'm one of the pianists here. I think I've been coming for 15 years. I think I was here at the first one, which was in Leicester, and it was basically about comedy, from my recollection.
What have you seen or played for that's been a real highlight for you?
Well, there have been so many, actually. I haven't actually seen anything which I haven't liked. For me, in a way, the revelation has been all the Manning Hayes films. I've seen a couple before, but I think they're extraordinary. They're all of an incredibly high standard. The ensemble acting is fantastic, and they don't look like anything else. They don't look like they've been influenced by American films or anything. They're a completely unique, sort of perfect little English genre, which work fantastically even today. What's I'm looking forward to? Well, there are a lot of films. I don't know of any of the films. The only film I've seen before, which I was, when I was before here, I played for The Only Way on the first day, which is a very good film, but I had actually seen that before. Everything else I don't know.
No.
So kind of everything is a potential highlight. And for me, that is the thing I love about silent films. When you're playing for a film, you have no particular expectations for, or you're watching a film, which nobody says, this is a great film. You go along and it turns out to be a masterpiece which nobody's looked at for possibly 100 years. That's for me one of the most exciting things about silent cinema, the feeling of rediscovery.
So I was there at the festival, and I know Pete was there for some of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, there were a few rediscoveries. I mean, everyone at the festival was raving about the Manning Hayes films that John was talking about there. First, I'm going to ask Pete, what were your highlights at the festival?
I think for me, I hadn't seen Tansy before, and that was...
The Hepworth.
Yeah, very fun. Beautiful pastoral piece, and actually well acted and so on. Very hackneyed plot, but good fun to watch. And that was one that was taking place in one of the colleges. It was because it was in Cambridge, so we were in which college was that?
Emmanuel
College. So in their very nice, newly acquainted lecture hall. So that was really nice to see it there. But I think the highlight for me on the day was probably Head of the Family, which was a British coastal comedy about a little bit of mistaken identity, but actually was really quite sophisticated in places. Some interesting gender role stuff, but just actually very funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the Manning Hayes ones. There were a lot of films, Matthew, that were directed by Manning Hayes, and they were all adapted by Lydia Hayward from some W.W. Jacobs novels, which nobody reads now.
No.
They're these sweet little British stories. If I described a Manning Hayes film to you, you'd probably think it sounded like a snooze fest or an episode of The Archers. But actually, they were really, really charming films and very funny and very engaging. And it was quite a bit of a warm glow at the festival about them, because it was nice to celebrate something that's purely British. I mean, I know as a British film writer and critic, you must love it when you have a British triumph on your hands.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, I'm not massively patriotic in that way, I suppose.
No.
You know, if it's a good film, it's a good film.
Mm.
I don't get more excited because it's British. I suppose maybe, well...
More able to do an interview, maybe.
I think it's exciting when you get like a sudden new British talent, like you know, say Ben Wheatley or somebody who kind of catches people's imaginations and whatever. Actually, if you're going to talk about British stories like that, Joanna Hogg.
Mm.
Oh yes.
Who's, I mean, I don't know, it sounds very low key stories. Perhaps if you describe the plot of a Joanna Hogg film, you'd be, you know, it doesn't sound like the most exciting film in the world, but actually it's if you get there, it's very gripping and what have you. Is that a similar sort of thing? Or?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, the Manning Hayes films are more sweet than they are perhaps sort of glacial and understated. But I think there's something about, we've always had that British film history gets a bit of a knocking, and British silent film history has always had a bit of a knocking. So when things pop up like Underground or, you know, The Firstborn, which was one of the biggest successes at the Silent Film Festival. But I'll say, I know that you've seen The Firstborn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one that sort of comes out of nowhere at you, because Miles Mander, who knew?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
He had a bit of everything there. Writer, director, star. I always, you know, Yeah. Did the theme tune.
No, Stephen Horn did.
No,
the theme
sorry,
tune.
Yeah, no, that, and very good. Well, so I'm like you, Matthew. I don't rewatch films much, and because I had a ticket for that day, I saw The Firstborn again for the second time this year, second time in 3 months, which would normally be anathema to me. But I was there, and it was lovely to watch it again, kind of knowing what was going to happen. Mm. And it's a terrific little film, really, really powerful, and worked well in a nice big screening. Had a good turnout, wasn't full, but it was a good turnout for him. So. And yeah. I think that's what's nice about as we said last time on this, that the British Silent Film Festival is spending quite a bit of time uncovering films, and happy to have the conversation on how good the films are sometimes as well. It's not, this is always a classic. They know the problems with some of them, and are happy to talk about them too. Though certainly The Firstborn hasn't got that many problems, apart from maybe a final act twist, which you don't really see coming.
I do remember the LFF screening was great. Yeah. Right? There was a really sort of electric atmosphere in there, and then afterwards there was kind of after party, but the after party which seemed to be full of, you know, everybody was actually talking about the film.
Yeah.
But rather than just kind of, you know, making small talk or whatever, we were all kind of really excited about what we'd just seen. And you don't get that very often. You certainly don't get that with a lot of festival films. Mm. So yeah, it was very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I remember feeling quite gratified. I think it was the film critic from Heat magazine. I don't want to name because I might have got it wrong, but seeing on Twitter afterwards, he said it was the first silent film with live music he'd ever seen. And I thought, well, you've seen a British film, one that not many people know, and a really cracking film. And, you know, I hope you guys see some more. Not that, you know, I'm sure Heat magazine covers them too much, but...
Sure, they have covered at least one this year. So, no names.
The film that shall not be named.
Well, he only do three reviews a week, so maybe not.
Well, I think they probably did that one.
If there were three other blockbusters out that week, maybe they didn't.
True, true. So, Pam, what were your highlights?
Well,
you were there for all of it.
I was there for all of it, absolutely every single moment, and, you know, I have the scars to prove it. For me, well, yeah, as I say, Manny Haynes, I'm going to be unpatriotic and say, by far and away, the best film of the festival was Visage d'Enfant. The Jacques Feder film, which is just absolutely beautiful and will make a stone cry. That wasn't one that it was really, really special to see it. It's a film about a young boy who loses his mother and then his father remarries. And it was very, very clever at showing exactly how that affected him psychologically and how it affected his little sister, in that she was less aware and he got understood, but he wasn't capable of really understanding it. And it was very powerful. That had in common with another film that I really, really liked, which was the Walter Summers film, A Couple of Down and Outs, that it didn't even have English intertitles. So we were lucky enough, actually, to watch it with Jane Bryan, who heard on the tape reading out the intertitles in translation. So it was that moment of thinking, well, this is a wonderful film. I'm really, really, really enjoying this film. And I know that it's not going to get widely seen. You know, it's not easy to get hold of. So it's really kind of precious moment. And I think that's really what this kind of festival is best at.
Yeah, it was interesting. I remember you saying afterwards that was a high point. I mean, I quite liked some of the Woodhouse stuff. Because I thought some of those short films are really interesting, a way of doing very British silent comedy. And actually, when you think about Woodhouse, you think of very dense, and it's all about the language. But actually, in the end...
Farce
and popping out monocles is kind of all you need as your shorthand. The rest kind of works, but they were really good.
And the Golden Butterfly, which I don't.
Yes,
think
I didn't
see.
I didn't quite see that, but
that was one of my picks. Yeah, that was one of my picks.
I wasn't there that day. They did. They actually did show a little bit of that of the Golden Butterfly, an excerpt before two of the shorts. So I did see a little bit of it. The dance audition sequence, which was really nice.
Oh, that's very.
I don't know about the Woodhouse stuff. What's the Woodhouse stuff? He wrote. There were films made from his short stories, or
yeah,
what?
Absolutely. Adaptations of his stories, and so you've got
golfing
humor.
Stories, particularly, yeah.
So the particular theme of the festival were the golfing stories. The Clicking of Cuthbert is the name of the book, I think, that has them all in. And I saw. Oh, I don't know. Ordeal by Golf, I saw
The Clicking of Cuthbert and The Long Hole, yes. Yeah. All of them are tied together by having the same actor playing a caddy.
He's a monster.
He's fantastic. I think it's he, because there is a Jeanette Cranky-esque angle to him. Yeah. He's short. He's always got a roll up in his hand. Always sighing, always trying to get away with stuff. But wonderful little character. Everything else is different in each of the films, but he seems to be in each of them. But yeah. He was great. I can't
Should
make
have
it.
Been
Harry
a star.
Something, Harry.
I don't think I've got
Sorry,
it
Harry,
down here.
But yes, you were great in those films.
So who made the films?
Oh, well, I mean, it's different. For example, The Golden Butterfly is directed by some nobody called Michael Curtis. But I've got down here Andrew Wilson for Audio by Golf, but I think they mightn't.
Yeah. But it's the same same company. They did them all at the same time, pretty much. So
right,
and they came out in a quick rush. So, but they were really nice, actually. Really worth catching. Hopefully, again, there may be a release for those sometime soon. I can see there being a market, certainly.
Yeah. It's strange that there haven't been more Woodhouse movies, don't you think? Like, you'd have thought that when the talkies came in, he would have really played well in that sort of thing, but there aren't any.
There aren't many, no. There's very few.
It's quite interesting, you know, because we've got a lot of British writers that we think, oh, the words are great, so witty, we must, you know, and obviously classic example, Noel Coward, who had quite a few adaptations in the silent era, including Easy Virtue, which I'm not sure, it's one I want to rewatch, because for me it doesn't work very well.
Have you seen the 2008 Easy Virtue?
I have.
Special. I thought it was quite good fun, actually. Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. You know, well cast and that sort of thing. The music choice was interesting.
The music annoyed me intensely. Most of the Hitchcock film is set before the play starts, so we have the trial of the heroine and we have her meeting her English boyfriend and falling in love and the proposal. And to be fair, that probably is the strongest section of it. As I say, I do feel that I've maybe maligned it a little bit, and I'm going to have a look at it again before I criticise it further. I think we need to leave Britain behind.
Yes, we should.
Because, you know, we have an international audience.
What are your podcast figures? Do you?
They're just, it's hard for the internet to count to such high numbers. It's still rather basic technology.
Okay. But definitely in their thousands.
Yeah,
easy.
Chaplin-esque numbers. Yeah. Okay. Audiences.
Matthew.
Yes.
You've come here with one thing on your mind, really. You want to tell us about your favourite silent film, and you're a little bit angry about how I introduced it earlier.
No, not angry, no. I actually genuinely can't remember whether I've seen the four-hour version or not.
And the film is?
The film is Greed by Eric von Stroheim. But it's my favourite film because I've got like a personal connection to it, which is partly there's a whole thing I want to say. I read the book I did American Literature at Sussex.
McTeague.
For my degree. Yeah, I read McTeague by Frank Norris at university. Really loved the book. I can't remember whether I'd seen the film beforehand or not, but I certainly saw it around that time when you could get it on VHS back then. And it sort of stayed with me. I did my extended essay on Norris, and then for some reason I got it into my head that I wanted to write. I thought it would be a brilliant, you could remake the movie as a talkie. Mm. And at the time I had in my head, like, you know, you would cast like Nick Nolte as McTeague, and you'd cast Steve Buscemi as Marcus, and you'd cast Winona Ryder as Trina, and it would be amazing, and you put it in San Francisco, and it would be a period movie, and maybe Scorsese would do it.
So it'd be period, because you could make this a modern film,
I wrote a talkie version screenplay and sort of, you know, and spent a while, you know, doing screenplay courses and things like that. And so my issue with von Stroheim is, how on earth did he make a 10-hour version of it? Because I wrote out the entire thing word for word, and it only came to like 3 hours worth. So what von Stroheim was doing for the rest of those 7 hours, I have no idea. Do you have any idea what I mean? Basically, if Thorberg made him cut it down from 10 hours to whatever it was, then Thorberg had the right idea. Who wants to go and see a 10-hour movie? Even you don't want to see a 10-hour movie.
Oh, well, I kind of. Well, no, you don't. If our friend Phil was here, he'd pipe up in favour of the 10-hour film.
The Marathon Man.
I was having an argument about Bernard Alexander's Platz, much like this last week, and the last 2 hours max of that I can do. The rest of it seems a slow build up to the ending. So,
well, you know, I think I've just watched The Bridge, and that's 10 hours. I mean, if I can have 2 hours every Saturday night for a week, I'm quite happy.
Yeah, if you're splitting it up over a certain amount of time. I mean, it is an extraordinary film, and yes, you want to see the, if you're a fan of the film, you want to see the rest of it because of the curiosity value and stuff like that. And it's extraordinary for sort of several reasons. He location shooting, for one thing. Mm. It's famous for the Death Valley sequence, which just obviously took the actors into the middle of Death Valley, shot this kind of climactic scene, which is still extraordinary.
Long distance as well.
Yeah. And he used San Francisco. What you're actually seeing is 1924 San Francisco on screen, which is amazing. And it's a really powerful film. It's really sort of, it really gets under your skin, I suppose. And I think the whole, yes, you were saying you could remake it, and you absolutely could remake it, because basically it's about winning the lottery and that destroying you, and the greed destroying you. And you could absolutely make, I'm surprised that nobody's made that story, actually,
it's
the story
a
about people
story.
Winning the lottery and then basically attempting to kill each other or whatever.
I think, having read the novel, and I think particularly because there are bits missing from Greed, and whether you watch the sort of 2.5 hour version, which I think is showing at the BFI in August, or if you watch the longer version that has stills in it, having, if you know the book, you can fill in the gaps quite well. And when you read the book, there's this awful thing. Every time she tells him how much money she's got, basically our hero's wife wins the lottery and he marries her quite soon after, and she starts to hoard the money away. And every time he says, oh, I think you've got this much money, she's like, oh, no, I haven't got that much at all. I've only got a little bit less than that. And it, the numbers keep getting more extremely, you know, at variance to the truth. And that just keeps hitting you over the head as you read the book. And if that went on for 10 hours,
yeah,
you might be pulling your eyes off.
He must have elongated it somehow. I just don't understand where he what he was sticking in. That
meaningful glances.
Yeah, maybe.
Tiny little birds on the train tracks.
Yeah, I guess. The thing about the hero, obviously, is not a traditional hero. He's essentially a murderer in that he... Can we say he beats his wife to death? I suppose we can.
We have.
It's quite an old film, Matthew, but you've ruined a lot of people's Saturday nights.
And he's stupid, and he doesn't really, you know, in the traditional sort of screenplay arc sense, he doesn't really learn anything or change particularly.
He's not a good dentist.
No. That's a great thing in the book that doesn't really translate so well in the currently existing version of the film, is that he... Yes, he's a sort of big, dumb miner, so he's used to sort of bashing holes in things, and then he becomes a dentist.
Right.
And he's still drilling, and he's still using all the same mining techniques, but in dentistry, which is a fantastic idea anyway. I'd written this screenplay, and I took it to a course in UCLA. That was supposed to be quite a sort of well-respected course, and all through this course, I said to the tutor, look, I know this lead character isn't a typical sympathetic hero. I know that's the whole point. And she didn't even know. I was like, look, it's already been a silent classic. But the whole point of the course was, at the end of it, this kind of well-respected tutor, who I think had written an episode of Star Trek. She was famous for having written an episode of Star Trek in the 60s. Well, initially I was too, but she lost it for me on week 3 when she described Casablanca as a classic film noir, and I had a massive argument with her about it, and I think my card was marked from that point. Yeah. But anyway, so the point of the course was, at the end of the course, you were supposed to give her the script, and she was supposed to give you a proper critique, like a proper script reader's critique of this thing. And the first thing she said to me was, oh, well, your hero isn't a sympathetic character. And I was like, I've been telling you that for the last 10 weeks. I swear she barely, I guarantee she didn't read more than sort of 10 pages of it, 10, 15 pages of it. So, yeah, it was a very disappointing experience all around. But if anyone wants to make the script of McTeague, then there is one available.
Contact you at
Film. Contact me at FilmFan1971 on Twitter, yes.
I think that's, well, maybe for the 100-year anniversary, or they've got a bit of time to ramp up to it.
I still think it would be a brilliant movie, brilliant remake. I think it would be amazing. I mean, God, they're remaking everything else. Why not
exactly, yeah.
And, you know, I was just having a little look at things, you know, just refreshing my memory. And so McTeague is written by Frank Norris, who's not a novelist that we sort of talk about that much. But
not
he
particularly,
also
he only
wrote,
go on.
Yeah, he also wrote a book called The Pit, and that was that was adapted by Dirigible Griffith into the great film A Corner in Wheat in 1909. And now that is also a film that's maybe quite resonant with, or a story that's very resonant with people today. I mean, come on, let's rally around the people and against the 1%, man.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
McTeague's a great read, by the way.
Yeah, no, I really recommend people read McTeague, and then at some point in August, check the Silent London calendar.
Yeah.
You can go and see Greed at the BFI and BFI Southbank, and definitely worth seeing. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
I mentioned the calendar, the Silent London calendar. As you know, we publish full listings for silent film screenings in London, and I've just taken a quick look to see what's coming up that might be of interest to people listening. There's a few things. Obviously, there's the Hitchcock season, which is sort of getting a lot of attention, but there are some really big films coming up that you don't want to miss. So, for example, on the 9th of June, Ben-Hur is at the Royal Festival Hall, and you've got Carl Davis conducting, and it's a photo play projection. So that is a bona fide big film. This is the silent Ben-Hur, of course, in case anyone gets any ideas.
Any chance to see Carl Davis doing a score, you shouldn't pass up.
And you know this is going to be the most beautiful presentation of the film, so... That's a big one. As big films go, we also have, and I'm very fond of this very silly film, but Robin Hood starring Douglas Fairbanks.
I'm very disappointed I'm going to be missing it.
When is that?
Movie.
That's on the 12th of July. That's at Cadogan Hall in West London with the Royal Philharmonic. And that sounds really exciting. And I do just think if you... if you've got any children that you want to introduce to silent cinema, you know, maybe they saw the artist. Ah, I said it.
then I think you owe us about
£10. Yeah, we get the money.
Then, you know, obviously people are going to talk about slapstick comedy and all sorts of things, but Robin Hood, I think, is a absolute corker. And just because it's fun doesn't mean it's not a fabulous film. A film that isn't quite so well known that I really, really want to plug, because not many people have seen this, I'm lucky enough to have seen it, is A Woman Redeemed, which is a British film. It's a very racy spy thriller, very elegant and sexy film. It's on at the Cinema Museum. This is because they quite often show films that are a little bit more obscure, and it's going to be introduced by Amy Sargent. And if you look on the blog, she's written a nice piece for us about A Woman Redeemed, which is a film that really deserves a better title.
I'll be there for that, certainly. Cool.
The last thing I want to pick out, because it's a little bit unusual, and this takes us into what we want to talk about next, actually, is a Buster Keaton classic, Steamboat Bill Jr.
I've seen that one.
That is a great film, and it's on at the Musical Museum near Kew Bridge in Brentford. So that's going to be accompanied by the Wurlitzer. And it's something that we were talking about a little bit on the last podcast, and Pete and I have been talking about. There are some quite interesting venues in London that show silent films. It's not all about the BFI and the Barbican, much as we adore those places. And you had a few that you wanted to pick out, didn't you, Pete?
It's more actually just sometimes site-specific screenings. I mean, we've got the great ones with the Hitchcock ones coming up. We've got the British Museum, Hackney Empire and Wilton's Music Hall. Wilton's Music Hall actually does quite a bit of silent film anyway, and I think it's nice to see a silent film in the kind of venue it may have been seen in, you know, which is always good, as well as since we haven't got some of the grand older photo palaces, picture palaces and so on, though they wouldn't have been around there in the same sort of way anyway. I mean, I think some of my favourite screens have been, I mean, the East London, East End Film Festival, Spitalfields Market.
Open air,
but not on the cover. Nice atmosphere, just people enjoying films walking in. If it's free, then they often walk past and maybe stop because it's good, because it's a lodger, or leave because it's Manassa and walk off. But, you know, there's good and bad films and all of these things. But, I really enjoyed that screening. I mean, Canary Wharf last year, of course, they had the screens up in the green there, and actually that was quite good fun.
That was fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I hope that, I would love it if they did that again this year. They showed Safety Last and The General and so on, the sort of big sort of slapstick films.
I believe you were stuck. Was it The General you were stuck watching when the riots started?
I wasn't stuck watching.
I went down to
see The General, and people were saying, oh, you shouldn't really be out in London because the riots are on. And, you know, a couple of us just went for a nice glass of wine. It was lovely. It was fine.
The ways to enjoy the riots, really.
Yeah, sock it to the mayor.
And then when I got back to my part of East London, it wasn't quite so...
Well, you had to clear all the debris in front of the tracks of the train. So just as you were getting up there, just sitting on the fender of the tube.
Yeah, that was it.
I'm a venue purist, though. I don't like watching things outdoors. And it's this, you know...
Yeah, no, I understand that.
We don't have the weather for it, for one thing.
That's true.
That is a problem.
And there are outside noise distractions. Well, yes. I suppose it doesn't matter so much in a silent film.
Oh, it does.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, I mean,
it depends.
If you've got someone playing the piano beautifully, then you really want to be able to hear that. And obviously... aeroplane noise is just distracting, but...
And I certainly don't want a situation where, as you were saying, people can kind of walk in and out.
Yes.
And,
you know. Well, they were walking the side, so they weren't distracting. But, no, I know what you mean. I mean, I can be like that with cinemas too. But particularly there are newer cinemas or cinemas who are trying it at the moment. That Hackney Attic we talked about last time, which is, admittedly, the Hackney Picture House is new anyway, but they're trying some sort of bar screenings of silent films and so on.
They had the Piccadilly on this week, and they've got quite a few things going on. I've been to see the recent Future Cinema events at the Troxy, which is a beautiful old East End picture palace. It's absolutely amazing.
I'm hearing great things about the Troxy, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And I've gone along faithfully both times to see a sound film, and they've shown a silent beforehand. So we had a lovely modern silent before Brief Encounter, and we had a bit of Harold Lloyd, Two Gun Gussie before Bugsy Malone. And, you know, obviously maybe not a screening for purists, but jolly good fun, and obviously live accompaniment. I mean, I'm seeing so many more musicians coming up, so it's great that they've got these spaces to perform in.
Yes.
Is there a resurgence of silent film in the work of the artist, in your opinion?
I mean, I'd always say that the artist is a symptom, not a cause. You know, the fact that filmmakers were watching all these lovely silent films and getting all these lovely ideas, and the fact that there's so many people that were so enthusiastic when the idea was first mentioned, is all part of the fact that silent film has been booming since sort of basically the very early 80s, when I think it was quite a low ebb and people started to put things on. I mean, when they started showing Napoleon, and then obviously we had Kevin Brownlow in the 80s and TV screenings and
Metropolis, Marauders Metropolis.
Marauders Metropolis, yes, which is coming out on DVD in the UK soon.
I've seen Napoleon. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is astonishing. Yeah. I saw it in Madrid in the 90s.
Wow.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Will you be coming back to see it if it comes
definitely,
to London?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
I think
quite a long
Kit's
film.
It's a slightly different version.
Slightly
maybe.
Longer. He's always finding new bits, isn't he?
Yeah.
He adds a new, about a minute a year or something.
Well, there'll be an extra 10 minutes then.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
He's got the whole film somewhere. He just keeps splicing
subplot
it.
Subplot with Napoleon and his dog or something. I don't know.
Wouldn't surprise.
It's all meaningful glances.
Yes.
No, I mean, that's something we're very excited about, the fact that that had such great reception and was considered to be so beautifully screened when it was on in San Francisco recently, and the fact that it, as far as we know, and fingers crossed, it should be coming to London. So back again to London. Mm. So that's going to be amazing. So it's time for us to live up to our name and depart the airwaves. Do join us again for the next Silent London podcast, when we expect to bring you a laugh out loud silent comedy special. Thank you to SOAS for welcoming us into your studio. Thank you to Pete.
Thank you.
To Matthew.
Thank you very much.
And to Neil Brand. And thanks to you for listening. If you want to respond to anything we've been talking about today, you can find all the details on the website at silentlondon.co.uk, together with those silent film listings. Goodbye, and enjoy the silence.